Hello and welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast, sponsored by DECA, the opera label. My name is Jana Wichlow, and today I'm with Gianmarco Segato. Hello, Gianmarco.
Hello, good morning.
Well, the music that we heard at the opening of this podcast was perhaps one of the most well-known melodies of all time. It's been sung at many a wedding, and that's Where'er You Walk from Handel's Semele, or Semele, I should say. In the English, it's pronounced Semele, which the COC is presenting for 8 performances this spring, running from May 8th to May 26th at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts here in Toronto, and it will be sung in English. It's one of the melodies that's so well known but rarely heard in its original context, which is actually towards the end of Act 2 of Semele. Now, if you're looking for a full synopsis, there's another podcast, which you can find on COC Radio, which will give you the entire story. We're not going to go into the whole story again here, but we're going to explore the music and about our production. Where'er You Walk is sung by Jupiter, who has conjured a pastoral scene to distract his lover, Semele, from her bid for immortality. And who hasn't been in that situation before?
Happens to be every morning.
Exactly.
I'm always bidding for immortality.
Well, today our music comes from a 1993 Deutsche Grammophon recording featuring John Nelson conducting the English Chamber Orchestra and Ambrosian Opera Chorus. And our Jupiter in the opening clip was American tenor John Ayler.
So I thought what we'd do next was to look a bit into the compositional history of Semele. It's never really been out of the performance repertoire since its premiere in 1743, but it's really only within recent decades that it's begun to be staged by opera houses, and by this we mean full stagings with costumes. And we'll get into the reasons for that as we go through this very interesting compositional history. Handel was in London and in the first decades of the 18th century, and when he first came to London, what was really popular with audiences was Italian opera, and this is how he sort of made his name. His first Italian opera for London was Rinaldo, and it premiered in 1711, and it was a huge success. So by 1712, he had moved permanently to London from Germany. And in 1717, he became the resident composer for the Earl of Carnarvon, who later became the Duke of Chandos. And this is a time when composers, of course, often had these attachments to wealthy patrons. And just as today, we rely on people to help us out to put on these operas.
Absolutely.
And corporations and individuals. But it was slightly different in Handel's time. But I think there's always been this connection between the sort of moneyed classes and artistic people like Handel. In 1719, Handel became the music director of the newly established Royal Academy of Music, and this was an organization that presented performances of Italian opera in London. So over the next two decades, Handel had continued success composing Italian operas for the London stage, and the oratorios that he was composing at the time were kind of on the side, so not as important for him. However, around 1738, public taste began to change, and Italian opera fell out of favor. I can't imagine why, but...
I was going to ask why.
It wasn't trendy anymore. A lot of it was popularity of Italian opera. It was also tied up popularity of the castrato, the Italian male singers who maintain their high voices through means we don't like to think about too much anymore. Around this time, he'd also started to compose biblical oratorios, so pieces like Israel and Egypt, Messiah, which is, of course, his most well-known piece, I would say, and Samson, and...
A little bit like the sort of big Bible epics, the films that Hollywood churned out in the 50s.
Exactly.
Sort of like a genre, and it was very popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The subjects for these oratorios mainly came from the Bible and from the world of classical drama. And these subjects, up to this point, had mainly been what opera serios were based on. So, we're getting closer now to Semele, of course. It was based on a libretto by William Congreve, and this was a libretto that had been written for another oratorio based on Semele. So basically, they took an existing oratorio and adapted it for Handel's piece.
Okay.
And he wrote it over a one-month period, from June 3rd to July 4th in 1743. I think that Handel was probably quite a savvy business person. He realized that things weren't really working for him in the realm of opera, in terms of popularity, as much as they had been. But even though Semele is called an oratorio, if you look at the score and some of the original manuscripts, they're actually stage directions, which Handel wrote in, which kind of makes you think that he was still thinking in terms of the stage. The storyline really, I think, lends itself very well to complete stagings, and we'll see how that played out for its reception when it first premiered. So given the lack of enthusiasm for Handel's operatic output at this point, Handel eyed a place for Semele to be put on the program for the Theatre Royal's Lenten concert series that following February in 1744. So he fashioned Semele for a presentation, and this is a quote, in the manner of an oratorio, and like I said, despite the fact there were stage directions in the score, and the work has ever since been identified more as a concert piece, and I think especially during the Victorian period was claimed by choral groups. Mm-hmm. Now, when it premiered in 1744, Semele apparently offended everybody. So,
oh no!
So we had in the one camp the people that were into the oratorio and they were used to religious subjects. So they were offended by the fact that really the subject matter of Semele is kind of racy. It's about
a sexy piece. Isn't
yeah,
it?
A mortal woman who wants to become immortal, and she's having this affair with Jupiter. She's left behind her fiancé. She's angered Juno. So it's a bit racy, and I can imagine at the time that if people weren't used to seeing these kind of storylines in the context of oratorio, they might have been offended. Now, in the other camp, we have the opera aficionados who are put off because the opera was in English rather than what they viewed as the proper language for opera, which of course is Italian. And Charles Jennens, who was librettist of Handel's Messiah, he dismissed Semele as no oratorio, and he called it a body opera. So this is the sort of context for the premiere of the opera. So I don't know, I guess our question is today, how do we view this piece? Is it an opera? Is it an oratorio? Does it really matter? And
and you've been talking about the current trend to box things into, to clearly, and to play with the idea of staging things which aren't maybe traditionally staged.
Exactly. There's been a recent production of Handel's Messiah by the English National Opera, and I understand it's coming to the Met in a future season.
That sounds really intriguing.
Yeah.
I've never thought of a Messiah being staged.
Yeah.
I'm so used to it a certain mm-hmm. way, but again, it's what you're used mm-hmm. to versus mm-hmm. what is possible.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just the continuing need to refresh the repertoire and give audiences new pieces. And as I mentioned before, I think in the case of Semele, Handel probably had in mind at some point it might be performed in a more fully staged, dramatic way. And there's certainly a plot there that we can follow and follow the fate of poor Semele. So as anyone who has attended a performance of Messiah knows, the choruses are a huge part of Handel's oratorios. And given that Semele is sort of a hybrid between opera and oratorio, I thought we would honor the oratorio side of things and play one of the choruses in Semele. So let's listen now to Bless the Glad Earth with Heavenly Lays, which is sung at the end of Act Two by a chorus of nymphs and swains who are there to rhapsodize about the pastoral scene that Jupiter has created to distract Semele.
I think I want to live in Semele.
Thank you.
production you'll be seeing on our stage is pretty special. There's already lots of background information you can find on our website and in other COC publications, such as our newsletter Prelude, which is sent out to subscribers. It's also available at the theatre, and it is online at coc.ca. And there you'll find an article by Carly Anderson, one of our colleagues in the education department, called Myth Manifest, Zhang Huan's Semele. It's a very comprehensive overview of the staging you'll be seeing. Now, in a nutshell, celebrated Chinese artist Zhang Huan's first opera production synthesizes many influences, styles, and cultures, and his own art forms and artworks. He takes Handel's Baroque oratorio, itself based on Greek myth, and the original story is from Ovid's Metamorphoses, and he links it with Asian aesthetics. For example, Han Feng's costumes have a Baroque look, but are fashioned from very beautiful, colorful, traditional Chinese silks, and even more with contemporary events. So just to explain a little bit further, the centerpiece of the physical production is a real Ming Dynasty temple. So this isn't going to be a reproduction you see on stage, it's the actual temple. And Zhang Huan discovered this temple and rescued it from its derelict state in a village or small town in China. And it has been reconstructed. First of all, it was reconstructed in his studio, and then it's been brought over here, and it has been reconstructed on our stage at the Four Seasons Center. That's a whole story in itself. And the actual construction has been documented by time-lapse film, which you'll be able to also see on COC Radio. Other COC Radio features to help you get into Semele include a listening guide, if you want more music, as I said, also the full synopsis, and some video explaining some of the musical significance of the excerpts. So, just to back up again, so you have this Ming Dynasty temple. The story behind it is that when Zhang Huan found it and purchased it, he found out that the family who'd lived in it before, the husband had suspected his wife of having affairs, and he had murdered one of her lovers, or supposed lovers. I'm not quite sure if it actually happened or not. And he was executed. And this only happened the last 20, 30 years. And he discovered this because he found in the ruins of, not the ruins of the temple, he found in the temple a diary in which the husband detailed all his emotions and feelings. Huan pondered the story and how it reminded him of Greek tragedy, and in particular, the mythic and tragic elements in Semele's own story. She's eventually consumed by flames, in part for her persistent desire to become immortal. So he saw links, and he decided that for his first opera production, this temple would serve as the basis of the physical incarnation. It's hard to express in words how beautiful this production is, so we really encourage you to see it, but please check out our website, as I said, for more visual details. They're very compelling. The character of Semele is a very demanding role. She has lots to sing, much of it requiring great virtuosity. It's very Handelian vocal writing, and it demands tonal beauty and great flexibility. And we just happen to have a singer who can absolutely meet these demands. Canadian soprano Jane Archibald was such a hit with audiences and critics last season, actually just a year ago, in last spring's Ariadne of Naxos as Zerbinetta. And her CD of Haydn arias on the Atma label has just won the Juno Award for Best Classical Recording. Little opera shop plug here. It's available at the opera shop this run. Just reminding our listeners that the opera shop is open before, during, and sometimes after all opera performances at the Four Seasons Center. Well, we'll listen to one of Semele's virtuosic arias now, sung by Kathleen Battle. This is her supremely self-regarding "Myself I Shall Adore."
Ist in diesem Ingehen.
Other cast members include American tenor William Burden as Jupiter, and he sings in many of the world's major opera houses, such as the Met, La Scala, and all over North America in a very wide range of repertoire, which not only includes roles in Baroque opera, such as Jupiter, which I'll be singing here, but he also stretches into the romantic repertoire, singing Faust, Don José in Carmen, Edgardo in Lucia di Lammermoor, and Nemorino in Le Désir d'Amore, and also sings 20th century and contemporary opera roles such as Aschenbach in Death in Venice and Tom Rakewell in The Rake's Progress. In the dual role of Juno and Ino, we're welcoming back Canadian mezzo-soprano Alison McCarty, who has appeared many times with the COC. Most recently, she was Olga in Eugene Onegin and Suzuki in Madama Butterfly. And she's also a graduate of the COC's ensemble program. And she's recently had some great successes in Europe. She was Cenerentola with a Glyndebourne touring opera. And she appeared in a rare Johann Christian Bach opera in Paris at the Opera Comique just last season, and has just sung her first Carmen with Pacific Opera Victoria in British Columbia. So Juno gets to sing some of the most exciting music in this opera slash oratorio, including another Handel chestnut, one of those arias that you often hear on star mezzo-soprano recitals, and that's the aria Iris Hensaway. And we're going to listen to the great Marilyn Horne now sing this piece. And I think I actually heard her sing that piece in a recital once. It was one of her her favorites. And she'll sing it now in our Deutsche Grammophon recording. So in this aria, in a fit of jealous rage, Juno sends Iris, the goddess of the rainbow, to rouse Somnus, the god of sleep. And they're trying to get him to enlist him to in their plans to bring about Semele's destruction.
I'm not sure if I'd want to be the god of sleep or the goddess of the rainbow. They both sound really appealing.
Iris hence away, 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 far from the realms of day, far from the realms of day, far from the realms, far from the realms of day. Or sifting hills to the Meotian lake, or sifting hills to the Meotian lake, a speedy flight we'll take. Hence, Iris hence away, Iris hence away, 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 a speedy flight we'll take. With noise and light, I will his peace molest, nor shall he sink again to pleasing rest, till to my vowed revenge he grants a prize and seals with sleep. A speedy flight we'll take.
As Juno's messenger Iris, Canadian soprano Catherine White returns after her success earlier this season in the fall when she sang one of the performances of Iphigenia in Taurus in the title role. And American bass Stephen Humes will sing the dual role of Cadmus, who is Semele's father, and Somnus, the god of sleep. And we'll also welcome the debut of American countertenor Anthony Roth Costanzo. He'll be singing Athamas, and Athamas is Semele's intended husband. She's the one, basically, that gets ditched for Jupiter.
It'd be hard to compete with the chief god.
It would be, yeah. I think he's doomed from the start, actually.
Dealing with the big man on campus there.
Yeah. Yeah, Anthony Roth Costanzo, he was one of the winners of the Met competitions a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, wasn't he in The Enchanted Island? The Met.
He was. Yeah, you're right.
So anybody who watched the high definition broadcast or saw it live will have seen him.
So for our next excerpt, let's listen to Somnus's, this is the god of sleep, his aria, Leave Me Loathsome Light. He's basically asking for sleep, something that we all love and don't get enough of sometime. And we'll hear it sung by Samuel Ramey.
Well, that's just a taste of our upcoming Semele production. For the latest news surrounding this show and all of our spring season, the central hub is our company blog, Parlando, where you get all sorts of behind-the-scenes stories, interviews, photos, reviews, etc. And you may have read about our sumo wrestlers who are going to be part of the production. We won't explain how or why. You can come and experience them for yourself, but it's anything goes in opera. It's a very, that's part of the reason why we just love it so much. And on COC Radio, you'll find recorded versions of our pre-opera chats, interviews with conductors and stage directors as part of our working rehearsal talks, listening guides, and of course these podcasts. Please note, these podcasts are now available for download as MP3s to make it easier for you to take us with you. This is Jana Wichelow with Gianmarco Segato. Thank you so much for joining us, and please listen to us again in this continuing series of podcasts sponsored by DECA, the opera label.